This is Paul Siegel. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. Today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about West March's campaigns, a playstyle built on open exploration, player-driven adventures, and a rotating cast of characters. Why has Critical Role picked that for their new season? All that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Before we get stuck into today's topic, I will remind everyone, as always, that at the end of the show, we'll be hosting our after-party chat. That is a live video chat that Dan and I host with all our patrons, and you can join in by becoming a patron. Just visit patreon.com/wanderingdms, join at any tier, and you'll get an invite to our private Discord server. Get your account set up over there, and around 10 minutes after the show, maybe 15 minutes if we're moving a little slow, Dan and I will be there to chat with you all live.
We have the best patrons. For example, Backris, who's checking in on Twitter and Facebook and Twitch and Restream, and we are live on those sites. So thank you so much for that. And so, Paul, I think the first thing, thank you for suggesting this. And the first thing on my mind that I don't track the actual play people quite as close as some other people. So I was unaware until you pointed out that Critical Role has been advertising that the new season for it, they just started with a new DM, is based on this West March's campaign. So we briefly talked about this a couple times in the past, but I actually haven't had a chance to really dig into what it is until this announcement from Critical Role.
Interesting. Yeah. I've actually personally run, two West March's style campaigns, and I'm on the brink of potentially starting a third. And so that certainly caught my eye in the news when it was announced that Critical Role was doing a West March's style game for campaign 4. Let's dig into like the meaty controversial aspect of that right away.
Yeah. Is it
really West March's?
This was my first question when I started researching this weekend. Among my critical questions, that was the first one. Is this so? And to be clear, what they've announced is that they're going to have a large cast, around a dozen players, and that's going to be cut up into three different groups, rotating three different groups, and they have their own titles. And we're going to cycle between the three groups and see what they're doing in this fantasy world. And that was my first question. Is that really West March's style?
Well, let's maybe, you know, for the sake of viewers, especially those who maybe have no idea what the hell we're talking about, let's jump back and talk about where West March's even comes from in the first place. Right. So this style of game essentially originates from a post by a gentleman by the name of Ben Robbins, posted back in 2007, now that I'm looking at it, about a grand experiment called West March's, which was a new D&D campaign that he was running. And it's named after the setting. West March's is just the name of the place where he happened to be running. And I'll just read off real quick his top, like what he lists as the three standout features of a West March's style game. He says, one, there's no regular time. Every session is scheduled by the players on the fly. Two, there's no regular party. Each game has a different group of players drawn from a large pool of around 10 to 14 people. And three, there is no regular plot. The players decide where to go, what to do. It's a sandbox style game in the sense that's now being used to describe video games like Grand Theft Auto, etc., etc. There's no mysterious old man sending them on quests, according to him. Now, that third part, there's no regular plot, right? That was strange and unusual in 2007. I feel like, you know, these days, Dan, you and I would just very casually say, well, that's a sandbox style game, right? And I've run many sandbox style games, and it's actually one of my favorite ways to run campaigns and my default way to run campaigns. So there's nothing to me unusual about sandboxes.
Right. I'm going to throw an additional tidbit in. So when Critical Role announced this pattern for their current season, Polygon Online did an article about what a critical role, what are they talking about with this West March? So this was just 2 months ago. And among the Polygon writers' observations is that this is very similar to the premise of an adventure like Keep on the Borderlands, for example, where there's a single fortified headquarters that the characters can always fall back to, and there isn't any quest. No one comes out and says, you need to go here, and you do need to do this, and I'll give you this prize today. It's basically driven on where the characters want to go, where the monsters are, and explore the wilderness. There's a wilderness to explore, not sure what's around there. So kind of similar to Keep on the Borderlands was the Polygon take, which I was kind of amused by. Yeah,
I did when, you know, in preparation for this show, and just because I was curious, I did watch a good chunk of a fireside chat that was done by Matt Mercer and Brendan Lee Mulligan prior to Campaign 4 starting. Just started, by the way, at the beginning of last month, beginning of October 2025. So they're only about 5 episodes in at this point. So I watched the fireside chat to see what they would say about West Marches. And then I watched a bit of the first episode. And, you know, their episodes are quite long. They're 4+ hours. So I admit I was scrubbing through a lot, just trying to get a sense of, like, what's going on here? What are they doing that's different? I want to know. And interestingly, I don't know, is it sandbox or is it not sandbox? I mean, that's, you know, perpetually the question about actual play, especially big actual play like Critical Role, of how much of this is really off the cuff versus how much is prescripted. And I don't have any insights into that, and I can't really speak to that. Who knows, right? I presume with the amount of content that they're pumping out, that, like, prescripting that just sounds like a nightmare to me. I got to assume that it's not as prescripted as some people fear it might be.
Got it. Okay. Okay. Interesting.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think there's some legitimate, you know, off-the-cuff play going on there. That said, it wouldn't, I mean, this is also people's livelihoods, right? And it's a show that happens at a regular period, and this is what they're doing full time. So I'm sure a lot of thought and preparation goes into every show, right? I'm sure that DM is writing quite a lot, right? Up front, right? And isn't just making it up on the fly. So somewhere in the middle would be my guess as to where Critical Role is.
Yeah.
I was forced to guess of that sort of, like, how much is improvised, how much is pre-written.
Now, I think that I think that might be, there's a Venn diagram, I think in my mind, there's a Venn diagram between what you just were talking about and the question, is this West Marches? So,
let me
grapple with that first question up front here.
Yeah, when we talk about, like, sandbox style, right, like my interpretation or where my thoughts go when the moment anybody talks about sandbox style gaming, whether that's West Marches or otherwise, is that it must be highly improvisational, right? It must be highly improvisational because there is no centralized plot. You're just reacting to what the players are interested in.
Yeah. I think my first blush of this, I'm gonna throw up a great chat that we got 5 minutes into the episode from another Eric, who right off the bat, another Eric immediately said, that's already not West Marches, when we described the Critical Role plan. And it feels to me like on the 2 points of they have a regular schedule. There's going to be one Critical Role episode every week that comes out on what, Thursday or Wednesday? Thursday. And two, it seems like they know they've split it up into 3 groups, but they know who the 3 groups are. So it sounds like they're going to have a rotating cycle of known members. Now I could imagine that in this group, someone, you know, has another commitment. They get a 1 month gig on a movie or something like that, possibly, and so they're not available once. But it sounds like they've pre-planned who the component groups are, which isn't what's supposed to happen in West Marches, I think.
It feels like we're working through Ben Robbins' 3 points kind of backwards here, which is great, right? So we just kind of talked a little bit about the sandboxy nature, the no pre-planned quest. His second point was there's no regular party. There's a big pool of people, and they form up as needed, right? 10 to 14 people. And from what I saw of watching a good chunk of the first episode and what I've read online, they do have, I think, something like 13 players set up, right? Brendan Lee Mulligan is the DM consistently throughout. And that in the first couple of episodes, they're just hot swapping people. And this is absolutely what I saw. There's There was anywhere from 2 to 8 people on screen at any time. Oh. And, you know, a scene would end and people would get up and leave and other people would come back in. And now we're doing this group, right?
Oh, wow.
And from what I've read, this is an intentional kicking off that they're going to do it this way for a couple of episodes, but then kind of 3 groups naturally will form. And then you will get just group A, B, or C. Or they have names, right? I can't remember what the names
are. Right. The soldiers, the seekers, and the schemers.
Yeah, there you go.
So basically, your fighters, your thieves, and your wizards, basically.
That's what it sounds like. Right. My understanding is they will, right, so then you'll just start to have these 3 different groups playing regularly, but all in the same world, right, all in the same setting. One group's actions may impact another group's experience. And from what I've read, there is intention that there will be some crossover. Right, that occasionally a person from one group will appear in another group's episode.
Which is great.
This makes a lot of sense to me when I start to think about the cross-section of organizing a role-playing game and organizing a television show, right? Essentially, Critical Role is, you know, live aired entertainment. And it would make sense to me that if you're sitting down to produce some kind of episodic video content, you probably want a largish cast, and they're not all going to appear at the same time, right? You're not going to have a sitcom where every single cast member is on screen all the time. That makes sense, right? So agreed. To a certain degree, the way those first couple of episodes are going, I'm like, yeah, of course, this makes sense, right? They get all the actors in a room, and they sit them around, and then Brendan Lee Mulligan's up there doing his thing, and then he just says, I need these players and this players, and it's more the narrative's needs that are driving who's at the table than the player's needs, right?
Yeah.
And that's sort of like, for me, that's where I feel that shift of, is this West Marches or not? Because West Marches is supposed to be player driven, right? You're supposed to be,
yes,
the players are, yes, saying, we as a group, we have decided we want to go accomplish X, ADM, sit right down at the table and run a game for us so we can go do this thing together, and off they go. Whereas this feels a little more top-down than that, right? It's a little more like, well, yes, this scene ended, and now we're going to do this scene over here in the manor house, and who's present? You, and you. Come sit down.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, not having eyeballs on the first couple of episodes, that wasn't that wasn't the impression I got from these. So they're actually, they're shooting in the 4 or 5 hours, and they have people actually physically get up from the table, walk
literally
out,
just
and have
standing up and walking away.
Really? Crazy.
Brendan Lee Mulligan saying, "Hey, right, I need so and so and so and so," and they get and they appear and they walk on screen. Yep.
Okay. Point.
Literally.
Okay. You can gives a
you
point
can
for
just
that.
Tell.
That's kind of funny.
You can absolutely tell that all 13 players are sitting there on the soundstage waiting for their names to be called.
Wow.
Right.
Wow. Okay.
Now, again,
okay.
I don't think that the intent is to do that long term, right? I think the point is to do that for the first couple of episodes.
Yeah, I agree.
Give you a sense of all the characters in the world, and then probably, again, like my gut says, scheduling actors. Yeah, you're probably going to be just this group. Yeah. Just for today's shoot, we just need group A. Who's on the call?
And that makes I agree. That makes a lot of sense, particularly long term, particularly like different from something where like we need you here for 1 month and we're shooting every day, which is one thing to block into a person's schedule versus we need you 1 day a week for however long one of these seasons go. So having a bit of a release valve there, I agree, makes a lot of sense with this kind of show's production schedule. That makes sense. Now, the second question, unless you've got something else to say about that.
No. Go for it. What's the second question?
Okay. As I was reading Ben Robbins' blog this weekend, for the first time, admittedly, the second question that popped into my head, and some other people are ahead of me in this on the chat at the moment, is West Marches, the way Ben Robbins is describing it, how is this different from original D&D? Because my last campaign, which I'm running just, 1974 rules with some edits, basically, white box, it's a pretty good description of that. And I think the reference to Keep on the Borderlands is very relevant, is not everybody in my play group would show up every week. We did have a regular schedule that we can talk about, but you know, there was no expectation that everybody would show up. We would have an online check-in system of who's going to be here this week. And at least in my D&D campaigns, like I say before, I have a particular headquarters town, and I require that the characters get out of the mega dungeon or wherever and go back to that town at the end of the session, so that it, you know, plot-wise makes sense that whoever isn't drunk in the next session shows up, forms a party, goes into the dungeon, comes back. I generally don't give quests. They have a rather large amount of places where they could choose to go and explore for treasure. And the original D&D with Gary writing, and you think about how Gary was running games in the early days. Supposedly he was in his basement every night of the week, and whoever showed up would be in the game. And right off the bat, we all know that original D&D says that a D&D campaign can be run for up to 50 players, but we recommend around 20. And we also know that in other sources, Gary was saying, I personally, I'm uncomfortable running for more than 6 at a time, but I have run for up to 16 at a time, if that's who showed up. And that's kind of in the ballpark of the numbers that we're talking about.
It's, you know, I do think when you think of West March as just conceptually, I feel like it very much describes probably how Gary and Dave were running the game when they were first developing it, right? Yeah, you're right. It absolutely explains that 50 players thing, right? It vibes for me with the, you know, the stories that we hear about Dave Arneson having to like take phone calls because somebody was like, my character needs to do blah blah blah, right? You know, and just run a game over the phone real quick. Where it's really like the idea is almost more that the persistence of the game is at the world level, right? That that it's more a story about the world, and then the players are whoever happens to show up that day, right? And that it's more of this, it's almost much more in this simulationist space than in, yeah, say, a narrative driven or a gamist driven style,
exactly,
of play.
Exactly. And for me,
Dan,
when
the way, go ahead. I was going to say, the way you describe your campaign running, I'd say you are on the cusp of running something that I would call West Marches. I think, again, like one of the big, the Venn diagram of West Marches and Sandbox is, there's a lot of overlap, right? I think that like the third point of West Marches and Sandbox, very similar. And we could spend a whole bunch of time talking about Sandbox campaigns, but I feel like that's not exactly the most pertinent and interesting thing. When I think about what's weird about West Marches, it's the first two points, scheduling and the size of the group. I think for your game to go fully West Marches, one, you need about triple the players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed.
And then two, you need the players to decide and inform you when games are happening and what's going to happen, like what the thrust of that game is. Right. So I think that's, for me, those are the major things that are different between West Marches and sort of what we've come to agree on as sort of standard play of D&D. Yes, the numbers that numbers that Ben Robbins lists of 10 to 14, I think both you and I are like, that's not so bad. I can fit 10 to 14 people around my table, right?
Yeah, and
it's
half.
Big,
and half.
It's big, but I could deal with it. Right. Yeah. But I think the intent is still that's maybe 2 to 3 times the size that he really wants at his table at any given time. But there's no expectation that all of them will ever show up for any given game. More likely, it's going to be somewhere between a third and a half of those people.
Great. So how about you tell me and the rest of us, so you're, of the two of us, you're the one that's actually done this two going on three times. So bit that is novel, I guess, compared to, or, you know, my understanding of original D&D, unless you account for Gary physically being present every single day, right? And just like, you tell me when you want to show up, because I'm here running a game no matter what. How has that novel element of the players pick a schedule ad hoc, how has that worked for you in the past?
That is the hardest part, in my opinion, That is the hardest part and the easiest part for me to walk away from. I feel like you can kind of take the spirit of that first point and maybe combine it with the third point, which is more that the players are in charge of the direction of the game. Maybe they don't really need to be in direct control of the time scheduling. Because, right, I feel like the gut reaction a lot of DMs are going to have when reading this article is like, I just got to be available all the time at a drop of a hat. Yeah. That's not realistic. Yeah. This is way too taxing on the DM. And that is a very reasonable reaction to have this thing. Right. And it's easy again when I'm thinking about like how I imagine Gary and Dave ran the game to imagine that, like, well, realistically, they weren't just like whenever you want to go, you just let me know. Realistically, it was more like, well, I have a schedule at which I run the game. Whoever wants to show up shows up. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like it's easy to take that step and say, like, no, we'll just run at a regular interval and, you know, whoever shows up, and then we'll figure out what we're doing based on who's at the table. Feels to me like a pretty reasonable variation of this.
Yeah, I think that when it jumped, but before we get off that point there, I think that, I mean, that was the one of the things that jumped out from Ben Robbins' blog. He said the whole motivation here is to be realistic about adults. Time isn't infinite. We can't do this every single week.
Yeah.
And I was like, it seems less realistic, and maybe this is your and my experience, Bob, it seems less realistic that the DM can just be available all the time. I mean, that's not any adult's schedule at all. So the very first thing I thought of was this modification of and we've talked about that in the past. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, we've had better experience of the DM saying, here's the date. You tell me whether you can show up. Is better metastasizes an actual game happening versus like everybody kind of consensus decide when it's going to happen. So I agree that was the first thing I thought in my head, would it be better to say the DM's available this time and every week you guys tell me who's going to show up.
Here's my quick hot take on that, Dan, is yes, but doesn't have to be the DM. You do need a person who says, this is the time, a motivated person who says, this is the time, I want to show up, I want people to show up, we're going to do a thing. And my hope in the West Marches style play is that could be a one or more players. Right?
Yeah.
That essentially you get, and not all of them, I'm not saying it's a distributed thing. I'm saying what you'll see, hopefully, is one or two or three people step up to be kind of party leaders, callers, if you will, whose job is to schedule and make them happen. And that doesn't necessarily mean like they're dictating this time or this date, which they might, maybe if that's the way your group works, but just that they are providing the energy, the motivation, and the organization to make it happen and kind of taking a little bit of that burden off the DM. And I think that's actually part of what makes me excited about this.
That's cool. But I mean, we agree. Go ahead.
I was just going to add in this for me is where it falls apart for saying that this is what Critical Role is doing, right? It's funny that Ben points out like the major thrust here is that people are busy, schedules suck, and I just want to make something that's more adaptable to crazy weird schedules of people. And I feel like Critical Role isn't doing that at all, because Critical Role pays those people to be there.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So they don't have that constraint at all. In fact, if anything, they have a multitude of people available at the drop of a hat. No problem.
Right.
They are not solving this problem. They're definitely not solving this problem. Maybe they want to solve the problem of we want a larger group of characters and we want more world building and a larger living world for the player, for our audience to dig into. Yes. And maybe West Marches adjacent supplies that, but they're very different.
And you know what, and this is a good point that they have a bunch of people available. If they need substitutes, Kilroy322 in the chat had an excellent suggestion on that point. He said Critical Role could prove they're really doing West Marches by inviting the wandering DMs onto one of their episodes. And, you know, Kilroy, once again, excellent design ideas. Good for you. We'd support that.
Love it. Yes. Something tells me that invite isn't happening. But
We're on deck and okay. We work cheap. Just throw a couple of coppers our way, man. But we agree if there's one DM, it's a necessity that the DM has to be open at one of those selected times, right?
Yes. Yes. And here let me pitch a variant to West Marches that I find personally exciting and I would love to try and do, which is the DM might provide windows, appointments, office hours, right? Right. I'm available in these slots, right? It doesn't have to be 100% whenever you want. Just you schedule it, and I guess I have to show up because that's what I signed up for, right? It could just be like, no, I'm available at these times to run games, but then still walk away at that point. As DM, say, that is all I'm willing to do scheduling-wise. The rest is up to you players. Go. And that's, right. I think that's, for me, that's what I would want to see out of a West Marches game. I want to see a couple motivated players dig into that and go, I'm excited about the world. I'm excited about the setting. I'm excited about doing things. I'm going to gather friends together, people from within the pool, and say, hey guys, let's grab Paul's slot next Saturday and let's go do this thing. And I feel like that's also something I think that, you know, I don't remember if he talks about this in the article or not, but I feel like an important aspect of West Marches is having secondary asynchronous communication channel with the whole group. Right. Where they discuss what's happening in the world, where they post content, we did this, we did that, right? Like, that's, I would want, you know, a Slack or Discord server or full wiki forum or something where the whole group is present and they can be posting about, oh my God, can you believe this thing? Hey, look, here's a picture of a map I drew, right? And it just adds that, you know, that sort of persistence of the world, right? We are all participants in this shared fiction of this world where we can post lore and updates and et cetera. And then from there, off we go to make games happen.
When you've done, like me thinking about my adult schedule at the moment, I guess I was going to say two, but I'm like, absolute max, I could maybe offer three nights. There's three nights that I could possibly say that's possible on. When you've done that, what was your openings like?
I feel like it's easy to look at this and say like, oh my God, I have to run D&D three times a week. And then nobody's saying
that. I'm not saying that, right? But I'm saying like there's only three nights and it would be a stretch. There's even if I was only, I can run maybe one a week, but there's only three nights that are conceivably available to check out.
Let me talk about my first two forays into this, because both of them are kind of interesting and unusual, right? Because that's what I think. When I read his article, I was like, well, you have to have a certain setting for this. Not game setting, but a certain real life setting. Like, this would work great if we all were in college living in the same dorm.
Yes, right? Got it.
But like, right. I'm not, does this really work for like normal like life? how me and my gaming friends live? I don't know about that. In the first one, the first time I attempted to run it was during lockdown, right? So we're all at home, we're all bouncing off the walls, and I was like, hey, let's run a West Marches style campaign virtually. I'll DM a game. I was excited about the concept of West Marches. I was also excited about, I wanted to run some Stonehell content. So I was like, I'm gonna run Stonehell, that's our setting. You know, and I pinged my group, my normal D&D group, who was no longer getting together because lockdown. And I was like, let's do this. And I know everybody's schedule is different and crazy and weird, and we're all stuck in our houses, but, you know, we'll figure it out. And we'll do, that's, West Marches is supposed to solve this. Let's let it solve this. That one didn't go so well, honestly. I think I only had one or two sessions of that game. We had a lot of discussions about it. There was a lot of setup, a lot of prep. A lot of, you know, we had maybe a Zoom meeting about it up front. And I think one, we never got population density. We still, I think, maybe capped out at maybe eight people that were interested in doing this. Two, never got that element that I think is super necessary of the highly motivated player who's going to pick up the organizational side and say, hey, let's. I had one player who was almost that, but not quite. And then three, just, I don't know, like, it was maybe too many variables, too much going on, you know, let's play virtually, let's play this weird mega dungeon, let's play, you know, West Marches style. It just never got its legs under it, and it just kind of, the whole thing just kind of petered out. That was my first experience with it. My second experience was more successful. The second time I did this was I was working at a video game company that was actively developing a Dungeons & Dragons IP content game. I think that's about as much as I can say about that. The game never shipped. Didn't happen. But a lot of people in the office were excited about this project that we were about to start. And many of them didn't have very much experience with D&D. And it was known that I had a lot and that like I could potentially run games for people. And so a lot of people wanted to play. So I said, let's set up a West Marches style campaign. We'll create a Slack channel in our normal Slack to talk about it. I'll just announce what evenings I'm willing to stay late after work to play some D&D. Well, even because it's, you know, borderline R&D for actual work, we'll even, you know, convince our bosses to let us start a little early and cut into an hour or so of work time to just play some D&D.
Sweet.
And all of that lined up, right? Yeah, it was a really nice setup for this. We were, and so in that game, right, the first game, as I mentioned, was Stonehell. It was OD&D. It was online. This was in person. We were going to play 5e intentionally because of the game we were going to develop.
Yeah.
I spent a bunch of time like setting up the world map and creating the background and the lore and et cetera. And then I pitched it to the players and I was like, all right, here are the nights I can stay after to run a game. Form up your groups and decide what you want to do. Like I think we maybe had an initial, like, let's all sit down and make characters together. And then off, we were off to the races. That went pretty well, frankly. Was I running games every week? No. Right.
Okay.
Scheduling just couldn't figure it out. Right. I was probably still only running at most a game every other week. The players did, some players did dig in. There were a couple players who were like, oh, I'm excited for this and I want to do X and I want to do Y and I want to talk about it a bunch and et cetera, et cetera. I also saw what's happening in Critical Role. I got little subgroups to form up, cliques, parties.
Okay. Yep. Yeah.
Just great. Naturally form. Right.
Love it.
Part of that was personality difference, frankly. Part of that was there was some players who didn't want to play with certain other players.
Yeah. Okay.
And And so they kind of just fell into this couple of groups of wanting to, you know, this group A plays on this night and group B played on that night. And, you know, they're playing in the same world, but did their paths really ever cross? Not so much. As it turned out.
Okay, great. And I'll interject that that's a thing that you see Gygax talking about in the first edition rule books of, and frankly, this is where we always laugh at the, a valuable campaign can't be run without accurate time records, is specifically for this issue of him talking about, well, I've got party A and I've got party B and I've got party C, and they go into my Greyhawk mega dungeon at different times. And there's actually a race condition, basically, of who gets to this big treasure in the troll lair first. And they're a bit, the parties A, B, and C are a bit competitive. How do you manage and handle that? Now, in later years, of course, a lot of people read that with anticipation and an appetite for that. And say, well, you got to have NPC adventuring parties running through the dungeon at the same time in order to, recreate that kind of action. Dan is not personally a fan of that, and I feel if you don't have human being competitors on the other end of that, it's not nearly so interesting or compelling as the natural state of D&D at the outset. Of exactly what Paul just described, of it kind of turns into a couple little cliques that aren't entirely totally aligned with each other. And that's a really interesting form of play that I think is very natural for this open exploration, maybe sandbox, maybe mega dungeon D&D play at the outset that we're kind of thinking about, to my mind.
Yeah. It's interesting, right? I think you're going to end up scratching a certain itch as DM, and you have to be interested in this, which is the fun of being the person who is the nexus of all the information. Like, as DM in this style, you're going to end up being the only one who really knows all about the world and all the things and how all the pieces are bouncing off of each other and whatnot. And you're going to be okay with that. And in fact, probably enjoy that, right? Because like, as much as I wanted to, like, I wanted to encourage the players, like, you should be sharing information, right? Post in the collective Slack channel, like, tell each other what's going on, right? Try to piece together the happenings in the world so that you can come up with reasonable goals for your groups and, like, you know, actually, like, figure out the mysteries that are in the world and figure out how to advance your own agendas, and etc. You know, naturally, different people will dig into that at different levels. Some people will be like, yeah, whatever, I just want to show up and play. And some people will be like, oh my god, this is so cool. And some people are going to be like, yeah, what this other group is doing, they're wasting their time. It's dumb. They shouldn't be doing that.
That really tickles me.
Gonna happen.
So
yeah, that game was fun. Again, didn't last super long. You know, we played it for a few months. We had a few different sessions. Again, long enough for these two kind of groups to form, essentially. But again, it just, I think the major problem was simply like landing in that motivation. I do think there is something to the regularity of scheduling, right? To make it a habit that it happens every week or every other week, always on a Saturday, right? I feel like I feel like your average D&D player needs that in order for the campaign to stick.
If it's I think it's very helpful.
Yeah.
And so when something else in their life comes up, it's at the forefront of their mind. They can't, well, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. It's a conflict on Friday because, you know, because every other Friday is my D&D night.
It's my D&D night, right? So I can't.
Yeah.
I'm not available for this other thing because that's D&D night, right?
Yeah. I think that's been very helpful for us. I think it's been very helpful. And we check in with our group. We check in and go, who's available for this Friday? And, you know, I have run sessions with us. I think we have a total group of about eight, and I've run sessions as small as two. I kind of prefer not to go below three. But occasionally it'll be like there isn't enough for a quorum and we're not meeting this particular Friday. Here's a question. When on the other end of the minimal number, I assume that whatever your environment is, you probably have like a maximum number that you can host. So if you're in person and like my friends, we have very small New York City apartments, frankly, can't fit many people into the apartment where we normally play. Or if you're playing, if you are playing online, the online systems that I've used, they start to get kind of cruddy after a certain number of people, a certain amount of video gets connected. Do you have to have a scheduling system that like caps it out and says after the first eight people sign up, we don't accept anymore?
I think that's wise, right? If I was going to do it again, I think the way I would probably do it is to set up some regularity. I run games every Saturday afternoon, let's say. I'm making stuff up. But I'm going to run games every Saturday afternoon, and I'm going to use some online scheduling system. I'm going to make Partiful links or something, and I'm going to send out invites for the next 3 months of Saturdays. Each one is its individual thing, and each one has a max cap of whatever my max cap is, 8 people, 10 people, whatever. Go ahead and sign up, right? And the nice thing about that is, when players decide, you know what, hopefully what you'll get is some motivated player is going to say, we really need to figure out X. We really need to go and retrieve that magic Warhammer before, you know, the kingdom falls, right? It needs to happen. So I'm looking at the schedule and I can see 2 weeks from now, nobody has RSVP'd. So I'm RSVPing and I'm saying, we're going to go get that Warhammer. Who's with me? And then you get people to pile in, right? And I think you would want that, right? Even better if whatever system of scheduling you're using allows people to post text like that and say, like, this, we're going to do XYZ on this night.
Yes.
I need your help. Who's in?
Okay. Well, that segues into my other question, that reading Robin's blog, one of the things he said is that you, for this to work, again, you need the DM to be kind of flexible and available. And you also need the players to establish those goals well in advance of the session. And part of that, and this is something that really did hit me in my personal heart, is he said, okay, I have general ideas of the world and places and regions and threats, but I tend to procrastinate actually detailing those. And so by having the players tell me, we're definitely going here on this date, that snaps my procrastination problem. Yep. That gives me a deadline, and I've got to sit down and I've got to actually develop it by that deadline, and actually it solves a lot of motivation problems. That felt really close to me personally. And what you're saying is interesting, is if, you know, maybe it actually helps to have a limit, because then there's some incitement to get in there and actually book one of the sessions.
Yeah, a little.
But I think for my
scarcity,
my players,
marketing going on there.
Right, exactly. You know, and there's pros and cons to that, obviously. But, yeah, you know, the players that I have, the way we normally do, you know, for what it's worth, we play Friday nights. It's the end of the week. They tend to be tired. They're coming from work. Not everybody's got their head on what's happening. And that would be a big adjustment. It would be a big shift for people to be thinking about what are we planning a week from now, would be a big shift that I personally haven't actually seen in my campaigns in the past, as much as the traditional texts, frankly, talk about it.
And I think that's why you have to have, as part of this, that secondary asynchronous method of talking about the game, right? You need some kind of message board or, you know, Discord server or something where just casual asynchronous talk about the game can happen, and encourage it, right? Whatever you can do to encourage that to happen so that players are talking about it. They're, you know, maybe they'll ask for stuff. Maybe as DM, you even post some things. Oh, you guys want to know the lore behind blah, blah, blah? Here it is. I'll just post. Here's a post about what the, you know, the local cleric of the town has told you about blah, right? Maybe you got a whole channel there for, like, here are all the handouts. Every time I give a handout, I'm just going to post an image of it. Right?
Yes.
I think you need that energy.
And I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go on.
In my game, I've sometimes said, like, well, you know, we've gotten close to the end of a session, and we've said, well, you, I think this happened recently, you've broken into the science fiction game I'm currently running, broken into the library, you download materials, you escape, I'll tell you what you find next time. So you could provide that kind of info dump outside the game, outside the actual game system, in a context like that. Which is nice. Now, before we run out of time, go ahead.
Hang on, I want to share this comment from David Heron, who mentioned at the very beginning, at the top of the show, mentioned in the comments that he's currently running a West Marches style. And you know, he wrote here, you know, that player guidance letting me focus is the best part of it for me. I've never been more productive in my D&D building. Right? Yeah, I think that's totally true. Right? That's what's exciting for me about West Marches is this. Carrying forward of the energy, of the motivation to make it happen. And putting some of that energy onto the players, right? Just like, it doesn't have to just be the DM constantly providing the energy to organize the game, to push the focus of it, right? Like, I love distributing that a little bit more to the players. Again, I don't think you want it to be, this is a 14-person democracy, let's all vote on what the next game is on.
Right.
I would hope 1, 2, maybe even 3 players in the group kind of rise up as leaders who are say, I want to do X, Y, and Z and motivate their
big thanks to David for that point. I feel like I just got a couple experience points. I think that's a very useful point of experience. And now again, I can't help but say, if you go back to the first edition Player's Handbook in 1978, there's the back section is about like how to be an excellent player. And talks about all the same kind of stuff. You need to be talking in advance of the game. You need to have a party leader. You need to decide what your goal is and who's going to be there and what you're going to prepare for equipment and spells before you even get to the session. So I do feel that part of 80% of this is, to my mind, younger players rediscovering this play style. When Robbins wrote, we don't have a narrative and we don't have quests, and that's entirely unlike any of our normal D&D game sessions. That was kind of a point of dissonance for this old school player myself. I was like, that's very much what our sessions are like.
I mean, but you have to take Robbins's writing in the time that it was written, right? 2007. Yes. This is the birth of OSR that he's writing this, right?
That's, yeah, okay. Okay.
You know, a lot of these concepts were new to folks who were in the modern zeitgeist of D&D playing. A lot of these concepts were new. So yeah. I think that's why I want to try and tease that apart when we talk about it, because I think that point number 3 in his thing is just he's just describing sandbox play. And again, I don't mean to say that, oh, that's nothing, that's trivial, but I'm just like, that is the part of it that I've already subsumed that part. I don't need a special style of game to describe that. That is just how I run my games.
I agree. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. I want to hear about, if you're willing to talk about it, so you're currently queuing up, Paul, to do this a third time. Yeah. What can you tell
Not
us about the one
all.
That you're currently Honestly, preparing?
You know, the funny thing is, I didn't set out to do this, and that's what makes me excited about it. I didn't set out to do this. Based on my past experience, I was like, oh, that was interesting. It was novel, but it didn't really work the way I had hoped. You know, it didn't have legs. I'm not going to put more, like, I've tried it twice. I'm not going to put more energy. It's a weird thing. It probably just has to happen organically. I don't think I could make it happen. So fast forward to most recently. You know, we had an episode just a few weeks ago about pitching old school D&D to a group of young new players. That both of these conversations are emerging from something that's just going on in my life right now, which is my partner is in a Facebook group that has nothing to do with gaming whatsoever. And again, Tanya's been on this channel a couple of times, but she is not a very seriously dedicated gamer, right? She plays from time to time, but she's not as obsessed with it as I am. But so she's in this Facebook group that is a Facebook group dedicated to queer people in the town that we live in. It's just a support and place to post, you know, LGBT-friendly events and etc. Just that kind of stuff going on. Personally, as an ally, I'm not in that group. I want to keep queer spaces queer. So. She mentioned to me recently that someone had posted, hey, I recently got to play my first game of D&D. It was super fun. Would anybody in this group want to get together and play D&D sometime? And there was just an outpouring of people who were excited about, yes, let's play D&D. And in the conversation, what came out eventually was like, oh, most of us are newbies. We're going to need a DM, an experienced DM to help us do this. How can we find such a person? And so Tanya went on and
You're
said,
in luck.
Hey, my partner. My partner is actually talks, you know, has a weekly talk show for the past 7 years about D&D. He's a great DM. All right. So basically, I got volunteered to run a game for these people. And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? Like, if you're excited about it, I'm excited about it. Let's do it. That has evolved. So basically, what's happened is that group has kind of splintered off of Facebook, partly because I'm not in that group, right? So I was like, okay, well, I need some way to talk to these people. So right now, we're in so we splintered off into a Facebook Messenger discussion about it with the third person who's neither of us who was the most motivated. So there's a third person who is like, I want to make this happen. I'm going to schedule it. I'm going to gather people. Right. So there it is. There's my motivated player. I'm like, yes. Hell yeah. Right. Scheduling became difficult, as it does with people, right? And already I'm like, this should be easy because we all live in the same town. You guys don't have to go far. We're all right here, right? But scheduling is becoming difficult. More people are getting pulled into the group. Oh, so-and-so said they might be interested. Oh, can my partner come? Oh, how about this? How about this, right? Our Facebook Messenger group is now 12 people in addition to me, all talking about doing this, playing this game. And I scheduled a game to happen in actually next week. I've got the first game scheduled to happen. Already there's a couple people in the group who are like, oh, I can't make that day. That's disappointing. I was maybe I'll run another one. Maybe I'll run another one. And so over breakfast, Tanya and I were discussing it. And I was like, you know, what this group needs is West Marches. And she was like, what's that? And so we started talking about West Marches. And I went, you know what? It might work. It might work for this group. I'm gonna get past the first game. That's what I'm gonna schedule a game, make sure they're not, you know, horrible people that I don't want to be around, make sure they're all cool, right? And if the energy is there, yeah. So I'm not like I'm in this third go round of possibly maybe gonna run a West Marches game. I'm trying to just play it cool and not push for it. And if it happens, it'll happen. It's kind of the space that my head is in right now.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's great.
But I could see it happening, right? It fits the group, right? It is trying to solve exactly the problems that this group has.
Yeah.
The big group. They're all excited. They have busy schedules. They can't all make the same things happen. Like, you know what? It might work for them. You know, and I would be willing, I think, maybe to not be super regimented about the scheduling. Like, what if I did every other Saturday and every other Thursday night or something like that? Like, I'll give a slightly amorphous schedule so that, like, people who are like, well, I can never make Saturday afternoon because blah, blah, blah. Well, here's a weeknight evening. We could do that, right?
Yeah.
Maybe,
yeah.
Like, again, don't want to bite off more than I can chew. Definitely don't want to end up like, oh my God, I'm running D&D 3 times a week. But right. Also want to make sure that it's encouraging a mixture of the group to show up.
I think that's great. I think that I really like the sound of that. And at this point,
I would say I had kind of have two people in the group who both seem like they might be motivated enough to be that motivated player. One is this person who originally started the whole thing. And now Tanya's gotten pulled in and she's actually like excited about it. So like,
great.
I'm like,
great,
okay, I might have two party leaders. Okay.
Brilliant. Great. Okay. Now we need a little tension, a little drama. Yeah. I don't know if there's any drama in that circle already. I'm already eager to hear about it.
Yeah. I'm sure I will be discussing it more on the show as it goes forward. You know, I don't know. I'm also preparing myself for the last 2 times I've tried to run games like this. And I don't want to blame West Marches. Let's face it. A large number of campaigns I've planned peter out after a couple of months. I think that's just the nature of role-playing games, right? Some campaigns stick, and man, we play for a year plus. Yep. Some campaigns just can't quite get their legs under them.
Yeah. It's funny because Robbins is talking about when he originally did his West Marches, it lasted about 2 years, and just coincidentally, I'm coming to the conclusion of my science fiction campaign after 2 years. So if you get the 2 years in, that's a good run. That's a really good run, frankly.
Yeah.
I think Gary and Dave's early campaigns probably lasted about that long, probably, when you look at them.
Yeah, if you go to the archives of my own blog, right, I started blogging in 2010 because that was when my big, foray into old school gaming began. With a very, very serious campaign that probably lasted 2-ish years, maybe. Maybe it was not quite. Maybe a year and a half. But it was,
got it.
Yeah, that was a hell of a campaign.
That's impressive. I'm seeing David here saying that he actually offers slots 4 times a week and will usually only actually run one, very rarely winds up running twice in the same week.
Nice.
Which is interesting. I feel like I would have a hard time doing it more than once a week. Like I ran a session this Friday. We break up. I mean, actually we broke up early that night, and I'm wired when I get home. And every Friday night, I'm like, Dan, find some way to get your ass to bed so you can be okay on Saturday. And inevitably, once again, I don't go to bed till after 4 a.m. late Friday night. And there's a number of people I know that are getting emails from me like, 2-3 a.m. late Friday night, because I'm like, well, I might as well get this out of the way. And here's something about the game that occurred to me. So I don't think I could personally do too much more than once a week.
I'm looking at David's chat here, and because there's a couple questions I immediately had, which he's already answered in the chat. Thank you, David. Of like 24 to 25 players, about 5 core leaders in the group.
Yeah,
I'm like, well, that's big. That's you got a big group, and that sounds amazing. You're living the dream. Well done,
I mean, the Urtext text. I mean, I'm looking at the Urtext text right here, Paul, and it says clearly the best ratio is around 1 referee to 20 players. Which is pretty much exactly what David has there. Anywhere between 4 and 50. It's canon, kids. Anywhere between 4 and 50 is okay. So Paul, you get like 12 or 13. Good to go.
Well, 12 or 13 feels pretty good to me. I would be very pleased if I could have 2 or maybe even 3 kind of core leader types. I wouldn't. I think like you, I wouldn't want to run it more than once a week. Right? It would become too consuming of my time. But I also love David mentioned, wait, I'm just going to put this up here. I won't put it up. He says generally running only ran twice, 4 to 5 times in the year, but also had 3 marathon weekends. And that also sounds like joyful, right? If you run one of these and it goes on for a long time, I for sure would want to do some kind of like, all right, we're going to do it. All 15 people are showing up this weekend and we're going to, this is the confluence moment where everybody gets together. Let's do it.
I briefly, with my Star Frontiers campaign, I briefly thought the same thing. I don't see any way we can make it happen, but there is a world where I was like, oh yeah, that would be the best. That actually would be the ideal way to actually wrap this up. So that's nice that you have that, some flexibility in that in your pocket to make that happen. That is actually a great way to set a tent pole on a really cool campaign like that. Nice.
Super and nice. We are out of time. Any final thoughts?
I feel like we just got
West
started. I mean, to me, I feel like some of it, and I'm so glad that we could take apart a couple of different threads in Robin's original post about West Marches. And I feel like around 2/3 of it feels like younger players rediscovering what original D&D play was like out of the box right off the bat. And I personally like it. I personally like a campaign that's a series of picaresques. I don't like the overarching railway plot where people try to recreate movies or novels. I don't think that's the best version of the art form myself. And having a large body of players and being flexible with everybody's time, I totally get that. I love this bit about players tell you in advance, which cuts off my design procrastination as DM and gives me a deadline. That really warms my heart quite a bit. And I feel very familial about a campaign running like this that winds up coming back to where we started from. That's kind of my favorite way to see D&D run. The scheduling is the new part. The not having a regular scheduled time and date would be the new part that I haven't experimented with yet. Maybe I'll do that in the future.
Yeah, I love. I think if I were, you know, if I were seriously doing it again, if I end up in that space, I think I would push pretty hard for like setting up a private Discord server just for the group. It gives you nice channels where you can post stuff, have side conversations about the content as an event system, so you could post these are when the games are happening, with including like setting caps for how many people can sign up and etc. Like all that stuff built into one piece of software, I think is the way to do it. I also just want to touch back like on the critical role point that we talked about at the very beginning. I think generally what I'm seeing is most consensus on the internet is like not really West Marches, but I'm not unhappy about that. I think like good for them for experimenting with something different. Good for them for creating a different show with a larger group, and good for them for getting the name West Marches out there and like saying this is okay. Even if it's just inspired by West Marches, people are going to go look it up, right? And maybe that gets a little more attention on this style of play, and that's great. I would love more people to be excited about this kind of game.
That's a great observation. Okay, points to Critical Role, points to you, Paul, for pointing that out. That actually is a great observation, is getting a little bit more texture to... And we commonly think about, like, when we have new players, like, it might be a disadvantage that they expect Matt Mercer-style play all the time. And so giving them a little bit more of a view of a more flexible play style might actually be really good for the hobby. You're right.
Yeah, for sure. Viewers, if you have thoughts, if you have experiences having run a West Marches style campaign, good or bad, I'd love to hear from you. Please leave us a comment here in the YouTube video. Tell us about what went right or what went wrong in your West Marches campaign, how you do it differently. I'd personally love to hear it because I'm on the precipice of maybe going down this road a third time. And maybe you'll have interesting thoughts that will spin us off in a new direction for a new show.
Absolutely. And remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We're on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, TikTok, Loops, and GitHub. We have the handle Wandering DMs on all those sites. So please look for us there and explode that like button.
If you prefer to listen to the show in audio-only podcast format, you can do so. Those files are available on our website at wanderingdms.com. Also, you can find us on various podcast carriers like iTunes and Spotify and Pocket Cast. If you're listening to this show right now on one of those other sites and it offers the ability to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really appreciate it.
We really do. And of course, huge thanks to our patrons who support the show here. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms, and you'll get access to our private Discord server with the conversations continuing around the clock. You might want to have like a Discord server to have conversations when the game's not happening and feed other ideas into your games. And that's what we have on our private Discord server. It's a wonderful resource, and our patrons just have great genius ideas, sometimes hard questions and really wonderful answers about design issues in D&D and science fiction, horror games and miniatures and all kinds of stuff. We would love to see you posting there and join us. And again, just like Paul said, in about 10 or 15 minutes, we'll be there for our live video after chat with our patrons to continue the conversation. We've had such great chat here today, Paul. I really appreciate the questions about this West Marches style, some really good analysis about what is new and what isn't about it, some experiences like with David from people who have actually run it, I think is really invaluable for me to see. And also thanks to TMI Doctor for getting you to run another campaign and also promoting Wandering DMs in the process. We really appreciate that, TMI Doctor. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And just, I will just pitch too. I'm sure that our after chat is going to be very lively as we discuss more of the what's and wherefores of West Marches style play. I won't be surprised if some discussion crops up asynchronously in some of the channels on our Discord server. So if you're on the fence, I highly recommend come join us. Come join our Patreon, get access to our Discord server, and I'm sure there's going to be a ton more interesting conversation about this.
I am really looking forward to that. And don't forget, viewers, we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. We have a very regular schedule here. So we're live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. Please join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.